Hello, my friend. Well, I'm out of hibernation. I just looked back and September was the last show that I did, and I made all these promises to say that I was going to do this on a weekly basis. And you know what? I'll still make the same promises that I'll try and do this on a weekly basis. We might get round to doing it. Who knows? But this, my friend, is episode 87. We've done 86 of these and this is number 87. I'm going to keep this relatively brief, hoping to keep it no more than 15 minutes. It might drag on slightly more. But I'm going to talk about three things. I'm going to talk about news, and of course the big news in buy-to-let is the increase in the ADS from 4% to 6%. So we'll have a chat about that. I want to just to tell you a little bit more about my story and where I'm at. The last time I had invested in buy-to-let was back just before the crash in 2008. I hadn't touched anything for best part of 14 years. And with the advent of the limited company side of things, then I've decided to dip my toe in. So I'll tell you how I've got on with that. I'm quite pleased as where we've actually got. I've set up a limited company, but more of that later. And then just a little update as to how we're getting on at the Scottish Property Podcast. Nick Ponte, he's done an absolutely stellar job. I don't know, I suppose many of you who are listening to this will probably pop along on a monthly basis. We meet at the Glen Hill Hotel in Renfrew every first Wednesday, and it's a tight group of people. We have, I think we've had as many as 80 coming along, and it is just a really nice environment where we talk about the market. I do a spiel about mortgages. We've got the estate agents giving us a spiel as far as what the market is doing. Jane Buchanan does that. And then we've got Amjad doing the accountancy side of things. And of course, Nick Ponte being a letting agent and running ARC Property, he does a bit about that. So if you haven't been along, I would thoroughly recommend you coming along. As I say, it's the Glen Hill Hotel. It's the first Wednesday of the month, so work that out for yourself as to when that is. But just a great evening goes on. Kicks off, I think, about 6:30, and we're out the door by about 9. Great. So what I'm going to do is I'll do a little bit of a spiel about what I spoke about at the seminar. That's all for the future. Let's kick off. ADS, 4% to 6%. Unless you've been hiding in a cave, you will know that it's gone from 4% to 6%. It is now twice as expensive as far as the tax is concerned in buying a second property in Scotland as it is in England. And I'll come to this, but just to me, there doesn't seem to be any joined up thinking from the Scottish Government. I really would like to speak to somebody in the Scottish Government so that I can get some understanding upon the logic as to why they're doing what they're doing. So I'll take you back to the day that the tax came in. I was about to purchase a property completely unbeknown to me. I was reading the mini budget on the BBC and scroll down, and then I saw 4% to 6%, and I thought, gosh, no doubt they'll have stated this. But as with all changes in LBTT and stamp duty and ADS, generally there's a period, a period of time whereby everybody can get their houses in order, and you get a period of time where you're able to conclude missives. And then once the missives are concluded, you know whether or not you're going to be paying, in this case, 4% or 6%. And that is how it all panned out. The problem was that you were given a couple of hours to get your stuff sorted out. So assuming that Swinney stood up at 2:30 and the wires from the BBC would have sent out their dispatches about 3:00, you probably had about 2 hours to try and conclude missives. And I'm so thankful for Cheryl McCourt at Lindsay's, who was doing my legals, and luckily enough the ball was in my court with regards to being able to conclude missives. Okay, so we had sent out an offer, a qualified acceptance had come back in, and we then had the opportunity of either going back out with a further formal letter and letting them conclude, or just to hit the winning smash and conclude missives. And ultimately, that's what we ended up having to do. We had to forgo a couple of clauses. One was the we wanted a guarantee, usual 14-day guarantee, that the boiler was going to be working. So I had to fall on my sword with regards to that, just to get the missives concluded before 5 o'clock. And it's probably what it did. It saved me 1,500 quid. So I reasoned that if the boiler was goosed and we had to get a new boiler, then I was in no worse off. But hats off to Cheryl McCourt. But if you were in a situation whereby you had issued an offer and you hadn't got the qualified acceptance back, you were completely stuffed. The ball was not in your court. You could not dictate terms. So you either had to suck it up or try and get your solicitor to contact the other side to explain the situation, that if you didn't conclude missives by close of play that day, then you're going to end up having to pay an extra 2%. And goodness me, who in the buy-to-let community has got an extra 2% in their pocket? All of the investors will have done all of their sums and have worked out those sums based upon 4%. So my understanding and what I've heard since is that so many deals just completely collapsed because purchasers didn't have a 2%, or the canny ones went back and said, well, I would have bought it, but out of my control, I'm now having to pay an extra 2%. So you know what they did? They just chopped 2% from the purchase price. We had one client that I'd heard about. They ended up having to pay an extra £7,000. Now, they decided to go ahead with the purchase mainly because it was a case of they were buying a second property because they couldn't sell their own property. And the usual law is that you've got 18 months in those circumstances. If you're buying a second property and you sell your own residential property within 18 months and you're replacing one with the other, then you've got 18 months in which to sell. But this couple ended up forking out, I think it was £7,000 from recollection. But just so unfair. I mean, fair enough, there's an argument to say why they should have done 4% to 6%. You know, if they're going to do it, they're going to do it. But for God's sake, make sure that you give everybody a reasonable period of time. I mean, giving somebody 2 hours notice is just a nonsense, an absolute nonsense. And so I'm going to come and talk about, well, what is the rationale here? It can't be tax raising, okay? Because I think they're only raising, based upon last year's figures, they're only raising about 2 and a bit million as far as tax is concerned. That's not going to build another hospital, is it? So I don't understand, because what... So here's my view. My view is that it potentially will mean that there is more stock that is going to be available because there's going to be less landlords that are going to be buying. But then this comes into the argument that is the stock that landlords going to be buying, is really that the stock that individuals are wanting to purchase as residential properties? There's many a landlord out there will say that the type of stock that they're buying is not the type of stock that first-time buyers are going to be buying. That's one argument. So you might find that the market cools down because there's not a number of landlords looking at buying property, because the landlords are leaving the market. They're just saying, listen, enough's enough. There is also an argument to say that a lot of landlords would just say, you know what, it's time for me to sell up. I've already had across my desk last week a portfolio of £2 million, 17 properties, landlords just completely fed up. Now, is that to do with the ADS? Who knows? But there's such negativity as far as the landlord side of things is concerned, it's inevitable. So if those properties get sold, not to another landlord, then those properties are out. 17 properties are out of circulation. So that's 17 properties which were for rent. So what are those tenants going to do? Who is going to replace the landlords who are disaffected, who want to sell their portfolios, and the landlords that would have come into the market but are not going to come into the market because of the ADS increase? Who's picking up the slack here? What's the joined up thinking to ensure that there are more rental properties that are going to be coming into the market? Because the demand for rental properties is enormous. And if you don't satiate that demand, then pure economics is just going to tell you that rents are going to start increasing. And surely to goodness, the Scottish Government didn't bring ADS in from 4% to 6% to mean that rents are going to go up. But that could well be a logical outcome of what they're doing. Who is going to replace those properties that landlords are selling? I mean, I've heard that there is some indication that the build-to-rent market is going to be a big thing coming on. But I've also been told that, you know, big, large, multinational companies who are thinking of investing in Scotland are no longer prepared to invest in Scotland because of the rent freezes. Why would a limited company spend all that money building a set of flats that they're going to rent out where they can't increase the rents? It just doesn't make sense. Anyway, enough of that. I see that I've already prattled on for about 10 minutes on that. It really is. Sorry, I'll get off my hobby horse and I'll talk about my own story. So at the moment, I've got 6 properties in Glasgow, 2 down on the West Coast, and generally renting the properties out to students. For me, it's a pension play. Okay, never intended, always a side hustle, never intended to go into property full time, and that will continue to be the case. Obviously, we're running bricks and mortar mortgages, and that's full time, and thankfully that's doing pretty well. So we can concentrate on that and just continue on with the pension play. So I'd stayed out of the market since 2008, I guess, had the crash. In hindsight, and you know, hindsight's a wonderful thing, isn't it? I probably should have come back into the market in 2012, but with the way that my career had been going with regards to the law, and jumping about a couple of legal firms and really just not enjoying what I was doing, the decision was then made just to start up bricks and mortar. So we've concentrated on that the last couple of years. And I thought, well, the time is right now, I think, to look at going down the limited company route. I had a chat with the accountant and they said, for what you're looking to try and do, limited company is the way to go. So we've ended up using Paragon Bank, set up the limited company, Lally's Limited. And well, quick story about Lally's Limited. I thought, well, what am I going to call the name of the company? And my brothers and sisters always ribbed me about my special friend that I had when I was, 4 or 5. And I said, I had a special friend and he lived in a dustbin at the bottom of the garden and he was called Lally's. So I thought, that's what I'll do. I'll call it Lally's Limited. So that's the reason why it's called Lally's Limited. It's my special imaginary friend who lives at the bottom of the garden. So Lally's Limited. So we've done pretty well. We've got 3 properties now. They're all out in Clydebank. My view is that the bridge coming over now from Brayhead is potentially going to mean that property prices are going to go up there. So we've got one in Bouldale, one in Bouverie, and one in Greenlaw. If you know Clydebank, you'll know where these properties are. We've used Paragon Bank, and one of the reasons we've used Paragon Bank is because they will allow, not a lot of lenders will do this, but they will allow what's called an intercompany loan. So it means that the money that we're creating out of bricks and mortar mortgages can be used as intercompany loans for Lally's Limited. And so you pay the tax on the profits, you can take that money out and then use that for Lally's. And that's been a couple of the deposits, and the other we've ended up buying cash. That was mainly an amount which came back from one of the legal firms that I was with, and they've paid back the capital on that. So that's all very good. So we're sitting now with three properties. We bought the third property with what's called the future funding. It's something that I don't think many lenders will do. In fact, I think Paragon, as far as I'm aware, are the only lender that do this. So it's a forward funding facility. And what they do is they ask you how much money you want. You then make an application at the same time as you're purchasing a property. And in essence, they give you a fighting fund up to, I think I'd asked for £250,000. So that is pre-approved money. So as long as you've got your 25% deposit, you go out, you go and look at property, purchase a property, and you've got your loan there pre-approved. You don't have to go through the rigmarole of reapplying. It's already there. There are some questions that you have to answer, but it's by no means is it anything like a full-blown application. And if any of you who are listening here have gone through limited company mortgage applications, you'll know that it can be an incredible ball ache. So that's where we're at. I'll keep dipping in back and forth with regards to what's happening with Lally's Limited, but I'm quite pleased that we've got those three up and running, and I think we'll try and see where Clydebank is going. I mentioned the ball ache of doing a limited company buy-to-let application, and that really feeds in quite nicely to what I spoke about at Nick Ponte's Scottish Property Podcast seminar. And what I did was I give a talk on some prerequisites that in this particular instance it was Paragon Bank prerequisites as to what they are looking for when they are looking at an application. There are things that you can have in place that Paragon Bank will be looking for, and if you can get these in place so that when we ask you for them, it's not a ball ache that you're going to have to reinvent the wheel, scramble about to get all this documentation. So it's pretty much an idiot's guide to So what this is a guide to what the lenders are going to be looking for in terms of documentation. So we'll kick off first with the property schedule. We're talking here about limited company applications for buy-to-let mortgages where it's a portfolio landlord. So we're talking four properties or more. And the property schedule is a standard document pretty much every single lender for portfolio, both with individual and limited company, is looking for you to have a portfolio schedule. And most of it is generic. There are that they would tell you that they would like you to put all the information into their specific spreadsheet, but pretty much all of the lenders have got exactly the same documentation. So they want to know what the individual values of the properties are. They want to know what the rents you're getting. They want to know what the balance of the mortgage is. They want to know what mortgage payment that you are having to pay on a monthly basis. They want to know which lender you've got your mortgage out with regards to your portfolio. Some of them want to know, certainly Paragon want to know, when you bought. They also want to know, is it tenanted? And finally, they want to know, Paragon anyway, want to know, is it HMO or a multi-unit? It is a bit of a ball ache completing that, but you only really need to do it once. And any self-respecting landlord who's a portfolio landlord, surely to goodness, they've got a property schedule already. And if you don't, it's what I would say to you is that make sure that you've got that. Even if you're not applying for a mortgage, it's important that you know exactly what your portfolio amounts to. The next thing that they're wanting to get from you are details of income. Now, I appreciate that buy-to-let is very much based upon rental income, and the mortgage is going to be based upon how much rent you are getting from your tenant. But when you're looking at portfolio stuff, they certainly want to know, first of all, if you've got another job. So if you've got another job, then they'll be wanting the usual tax calculations and tax year overview. And also, if you are PAYE, they want to see a P60. So if it's a side hustle, they're certainly going to want to know that. If you are 100% in to buy to let, and that's your only source of income, whether or not that be by as an individual or limited company, they want to see a set of accounts. They ain't going anywhere with regards to your application until they see a set of accounts. So it's accounts, it's SA 302 and tax calculations, and potentially a P60 if you are if you are employed. The next thing that they want to see is rent. They need clarification that what rent you are receiving. Now, this is where potentially a broker can help you out here. They would like to see a lot of them would like to see 3 months rent for each specific property that you own. But if you've got a good broker, they should be able to persuade the lenders to only see two or three of the properties. So you know, a good broker should be able to fight your corner with regards to that and save you time. They want to see that the payments of all the mortgages have been made on time. Clearly, they want to know that they're backing the right horse here. So that's why they want to see that payments of the mortgages have all been made. And also, they want to make sure to see how much rental income you're getting. So those are the two things, rental income and also payment of the mortgages. So just to summarise here, you're looking at, they want to see the rent, they want to see your income, and also what they want to see is, they want to see the property schedule. Now, many of the lenders have sort of odds and sods as to what you might also require. Some require a business plan. Everybody will require a direct debit. Sometimes there's a questionnaire to complete, and there's cash flow and assets and liabilities ledgers. Again, a lot of this stuff is generic. A lot of this stuff can save you an incredible amount of time by speaking with your broker and asking the broker what is it that is required. And once you've done it once, it's a case of you not having to reinvent the wheel, because you'll be able to use the previously completed assets and liabilities and cash flow forecast. It's just a case of adding more information to that. So that's where we sit with regards to the details that lenders are looking for limited company. That is particular for Paragon Bank. I gave that seminar at Nick Ponte's property podcast seminar, which we've got every month at the Glen Hills. I say, if you've not come along, do please come along, introduce yourself to me. More than happy to have a chat with you. Well, 24, 25 minutes. I think I'm going to knock it on the head here. I'm going to do a tip of the week. So a tip of the week can be anything. It can be a book. It could be a TV, a podcast. I'm going to leave you with, and you have to see this, it's a series on Netflix all about Bernie Madoff and the Ponzi scheme. Now, again, this happened in 2008, or all came about in 2008, and it is an astonishing story. I mean, everybody knows he ended up in prison and died in prison, but not very many people know his backstory. And I think it's four or five episodes of about 45 minutes to an hour long. And every single episode, it just ramps it up and ramps it up. It is just, it's one of those series where it's very difficult not to binge watch. It's not that it leaves you on a cliffhanger. It leaves you wanting to actually find out what is going to be happening. Not in a cliffhanger, by the way, just for a nosiness as to what ends up happening. It is absolutely fantastic. If you've got Netflix, you have to, absolutely. It's one of the best things I've seen in years. So that's Bernie Madoff. Just type in Bernie Madoff. That's the tip of the week, and it's on Netflix. Next week, we'll talk, I think, about Jenny Pitzler's book, Your Best Year Ever. I'm going to do a little bit on that, and it involves a workbook. It's all about goal setting. Anyway, it involves a workbook, and I'm going to work on that this weekend. So I think next week we'll have a chat about that. I'm going to call it a day here. I said I would go for 15. It's now coming up for 26 minutes. You've been listening to the Bricks and Mortar podcast. I do like to say that we're going to do this weekly, but I don't, please hold out for that. As you all know, I'm a mortgage broker, but I'm not your mortgage broker. My views and advice are my own, so you can do one of two things. Please go and seek your own advice, or pick up the phone, call Johnny, start packing. See you soon.